This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. The Department of Agriculture building right on the National Mall in downtown Washington. An otherwise faceless and nameless government conference room, save for the guy who was sitting in the chair across from me this morning with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that huge Asian trade deal he's been working on for years now. More specifically, the selling thereof. All that was firmly on his mind.
Mr. President, good to talk to you again, sir.
Great to talk to you, Kai.
On the theory that the TPP is a legacy thing for you, right, along with the Affordable Care Act and the stimulus program from what seems like a really long time ago now, how involved were you with this thing at the very end? Were you making phone calls? Were you working other leaders?
Yes, and the reason is not because it's a legacy item for me, because it's a legacy item for America. Keep in mind, Kai, that we started this 5 years ago with the basic proposition that the Asia-Pacific region is the most populous, fastest-growing region in the world. Mm-hmm. And since 95% of the world's markets outside our borders, we got to make sure that we're selling in other countries goods made in America and services designed and produced here in the United States. And so we gathered together these 11 countries. It was a very difficult, contentious negotiation. Our team did a great job. At the very end, you always have a few things that you just got to get over the hump. And so, yes, I made calls to prime ministers. I made calls to presidents. I made calls to U.S. businesses. I made calls to a lot of stakeholders, environmental groups, to explain to them why it is so important for us to make sure that we've got a high standard set of rules governing trade and commerce in this region, because if we don't set those standards, if we don't have strong labor standards, environmental standards, transparency, making sure that our companies are being treated fairly, if we don't set them, then China will set them, and our businesses and our workers will be disadvantaged. So we put a lot of effort into this thing. Now, our goal is to make sure that everybody here in the United States is informed about it. We will be posting every dotted I and crossed T on a website, and Congress and the American public and all the constituencies that are interested are going to be able to review this thing and see that, in fact, this is the most progressive, high-standard trade deal ever crafted.
When are you going to post it? Soon?
Soon.
Okay. Seems to me a little bit like you're betting on the come on this one, right? Because as we've seen the past 4 months, the Chinese are not afraid to get their hands in there and mess around with their own economic gears, right? With currency manipulation, with trying to prop up their stock market. Currency manipulation, in fact, was a big point of contention between you and the Congress when you were negotiating fast track on this one. What do the Chinese have to do that will prove to you that they're going to do this? Because,
well, keep in mind, Kai, that if you look at the data, the peak of Chinese currency manipulation was taking place 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 15 years ago. Right now, actually, the most recent intervention they did in the markets mm-hmm. probably propped up the RMB, their currency. It probably be even lower had they not intervened.
But it scared the bejesus out of everybody.
Well, it did, and I think that it also concerned President Xi, recognizing that you can't, in a interconnected global economy, continue to operate at the scale they're operating with old rules that maybe applied when they were a backwater economy. Now they're a major player and a major engine of economic growth, and they've got to be more transparent, more professional, more in sync with best practices. That, I think, is going to help. When it comes to currency manipulation, one of the things that we have in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and this is the first time we've been able to get all these countries to agree on it, there are a set of principles in terms of how you measure and what constitutes currency manipulation. Now, it is not an enforceable provision in the same way that, for example, violations of labor standards or environmental standards will be. But keep in mind that when it comes to setting up these trade rules internationally, our goal is constantly to raise the bar. And you're never going to get 100% of what you want right away.
Let's talk about the impact back home for a minute. I get that if I'm a big pharma or if I'm a dairy farmer in this country, this deal has immediate ramifications for me. But if I'm just some person out there in the regular economy, how am I going to see this? What's it going to mean to me?
You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's the big corporations that are all benefiting from this. Companies like a Boeing or a GE, they've got suppliers chains that go from Maine to California. They've got companies that may only have 50 employees that produce one particular part. You've got wine growers in Oregon. You've got tea producers, small internet companies and small businesses that are producing for export today, partly because it's powered by the internet. In fact, this trade agreement for the first time has an entire chapter just devoted to making sure that small businesses have access to these export markets, not just the big companies.
As he goes out on the road the next couple of months to sell the TPP to Congress and the American people, it's worth keeping our eye on the ball. What the deal is going to mean, not for the big companies and the multinationals, because they'll get a whole lot of the press, but what's it going to mean for you and me and for that thing that we have been talking about for months now on this program, how our own individual economies feel to us. Here you go.
Let me ask you a question about individuals in this economy. We've been doing some economic polling. It's going to be out in a couple of weeks. Yeah. What we are finding is a tremendous sense of people being stuck, of economic anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that this is a jobless recovery, because as we know and as you know, jobs are coming back in this country.
Right.
What we have here, though, is a wageless recovery, because they're going nowhere.
Yeah.
The question then is that the new normal? Should we just get used to that?
No, I think we shouldn't get used to it. And I think there's some very specific things we can do to finally start seeing more accelerated wage growth to match the job growth. Part of what's happened when it comes to wages as opposed to job creation is that as a consequence of globalization, but also because of automation and technology, increasingly workers have had less leverage. And so even if the jobs are being created, companies don't feel obliged to give people raises as demand for their products go up. They can say to themselves, you know what, we'll just invest in more automation instead of hiring more workers. Or if we do hire more workers, we'll tell them this is how much we can afford. And if we don't, if you want more, then we know that there's a bunch of other people that we can get. And we have to make sure that the middle class and workers have more leverage. And the laws that we set up in this country can make a difference. And here's what we know. There are countries like Germany where wages typically are higher, but they're still competitive. And it has to do with the arrangements they make and how big of the pie that's growing goes to middle class families and workers as opposed to just shareholders and financial firms.
Last time we talked, I pushed you a little bit on how, jobs inevitably, when trade agreements get done, they inevitably go away. And nobody who's in favor of free trade ever says, you know what, you're going to lose some jobs, get used to it. And you push back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you think people believe you when you say this will be good for us? Do you think my 17-year-old can believe you that in 20 years this is going to wind up being a net positive?
I think the starting point is skepticism when it comes to trade, because the story that people associate with trade, the story I associate with trade, I mean, remember, I'm a progressive Democrat who came out of a manufacturing state and saw plants close down in small towns and people who had worked there all their lives suddenly are left in the lurch. So I've seen the negative effects of trade. But the argument that I've made, and I make this especially to my union friends because they support me on everything else, but on this one we have a difference. What I've said to them is that companies in the United States who are pursuing a low-wage strategy and have decided that the way for us to compete and make a profit is to find the lowest wages possible, they've already left. They're already gone. And the question now becomes, how do we position ourselves so that we don't lose in the future? This trade deal doesn't make up for all the offshoring that's happened over the last 20, 30 years. I'm the first one to acknowledge that. But I can tell you that under my administration, manufacturing has grown faster than any time since the 1990s. And that's not just autos. That's across sectors. And part of the reason is because there are some things we've done to make ourselves more competitive. And we have also made sure that other countries are not taking advantage of us as much when it comes to the rules of the road. This is part of that overall strategy. You know, if you are fighting the last war, which typically happens in these debates where people say, well, look at what happened with NAFTA. Right. What I say to them is, well, we should have learned some lessons from NAFTA. And in fact, that's what we've done, which is why now we have enforceable environmental provisions and enforceable labor provisions. And as I said before, Vietnam is not going to suddenly have the same standards that we do. Malaysia's not going to suddenly enforce environmental provisions exactly the way we do. But we will have raised the bar for them. And if, in fact, they have these higher standards, which means that they have responsibilities and costs for operating in those countries that are higher than they currently are, then I'm confident we can compete. And we will continue to see insourcing of jobs moving here, moving back. What we can't do is think that somehow if we draw a moat around this country, that we're going to be able to avoid globalization and technology. Because, frankly, when you look at job loss and lost leverage, automation and technology has probably contributed more than trade has to that problem. And, you know, the anxieties are real. The concerns are real. But the prescription is not for us to try to look backwards. The prescription here is for us to look forward, and that's what this trade deal does.
Mr. President, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Great to talk to you, Kai. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
One more time, we've got the whole interview online, marketplace.org. A bunch of explainers about the TPP and my talk with the president last June.